You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Tuesday morning, the breaking news. Sky News out of the UK is reporting that they found body parts, and so this thing that's been whipped up because of the murder of a journalist, and again happens on a regular basis around the world, but. You have the president of Turkey, President Erdogan. He's blowing it up. So the question is, this thing gets thrown at Saudi Arabia, okay? Saudi Arabia now has to do their dance. And then what happens? The rest of the free world, does that include Turkey or not? Probably should not include Turkey. Turkey's playing charades right now. But anyway, Turkey's indignant about it. Which to me is like, somebody stop the music, okay? So it's pretty interesting. I was just looking for the story about it. It said the Sky News reporting that body parts have been found on the premises of the Saudi Arabian consulate generals, the guys. Sources have told Sky News the writer had been cut up and his face disfigured. Body parts belonging to the murdered journalist Jamal Khashoggi have been found, according to two Sky News sources. One source also suggests Mr. Khashoggi's remains have been discovered in the garden of the Saudi consul general's home, situated about 500 meters away from the consulate. So, anyhow, that breaking news this morning. The president of Turkey is promising the naked truth about the killing. Now, again, when was the last time you saw a nation react so strongly to the murder of an individual? Doesn't happen, right? Well, I take it back. The Brits did it, have reacted when the Russians used a nerve agent inside of the UK. Normal Russian murder and stuff around the world doesn't get too much of a response. I think the Brits reacted because a nerve agent was used, and it seems to be a relatively regular occurrence that former Russian, Soviet intelligence people die by some form of radiation poisoning in the United Kingdom. It just seems to happen on a relatively frequent basis. So that's going on. But you don't see it. So what's the point? The point is to damage the United States, put President Trump in a position. The point, because of our relationship with Saudi Arabia, diminish Saudi Arabia in the region, blah, 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 blah. So we'll see as the game goes on, because let me tell you what it's not about. It's not about Mr. Khashoggi and doing what's right in his name. That is not what it's about. So the games that get played. Today is October 23rd for those of us that have been associated with the Marine Corps. It's a solemn day for us, a day that we remember the 31st observance of the barracks in Beirut being blown up. So the commandant of the Marine Corps is down at Camp Lejeune, and he's going to address a gathering there. So we're going to try to take that live. It's being streamed, so we'll try to take that live here and hear what the commandant has to say. For me, I had entered OCS, I want to say, a couple weeks before this happened. I graduated, I was commissioned on December 17th, 1983. So if you back that up about 10 weeks, it would have been around the 1st of October, the last week in September, I think I reported to for aviation physicals. And then I think the class started around the 1st of October, so we would have been into the third week. Into the third week. Into the fourth week, for God's sake. Don't let me shortchange my weeks, especially when you count them like you count them when you're at a place where you're confined. But it was the first time that I was part of the United States military, that I was part of the United States Marine Corps when something bad happened. And you're looking at pictures of guys wearing the same uniform that you're wearing every day and, you know, being told that that guy on that list slept there less than a year ago. And you better get your shit together. And so it went from, you know, the theoretical to the very real as you watch that. And then I think we had some kind of memorial service or some kind of service either later that week or at some point. But it was, it doesn't seem like 35 years ago. That seems odd. Not odd, but it just seems different. And then I guess now when I think about it, I have different thoughts. We've had Ron Baskowski came on the program. He was a first lieutenant then. I crossed paths with Ron after he came back from Lebanon. And he was a tactics instructor at the basic school as a first lieutenant. So this Scoreway guy, and, you know, he's a lieutenant. We knew he just came back from Lebanon, or we had heard that. And so, when he talked, you listened. And not that you didn't listen all the time, but, you know, because most of the guys who were teaching tactics had been in the Marine Corps for somewhere around 10 years. Right? So 1983, a lot of them, you know, had... a fair amount of them had time in Vietnam. Some of them prior enlisted Vietnam guys. Some of the senior officers certainly had Vietnam time. And then everybody above the rank of major certainly had been to Vietnam. So we paid attention. Those guys tended not to screw around when they taught you. So he showed up and I remember him teaching us during some squad tactics event, squad in the attack or something like that. And I remember him building a terrain model. And he's very, very kind of plain spoken, direct guy with and a pretty serious guy. I remember him as a second lieutenant. And again, the thing about the terrain model, I'd never seen one built. So he builds one, and he gives the platoon order off this terrain model. And then we gave the squad order using the terrain model. And it was awesome. I remember thinking, holy smokes, that's awesome. Because when we went into the attack, when we actually did the thing that we had, you know, we were planning, we got the order, and then we did it. Everything that we encountered was on the terrain model. Like, I had a visual image in my mind what was going to happen. What was going to, not maybe so much what was going to happen, but the things that I would see, the trails I would cross. I knew when we crossed this to look for this. And I just remember thinking, wow, what an incredible thing. I mean, that order, it stopped being theoretical. That terrain model was awesome. I mean, I really, honestly, you know, knew what was going to happen, what we were going to do, when we were going to do it. So anyway, I've had him on the show, had another guy on the show named, I think his first name's Matt. His nickname is Gospo. He's from Mississippi. I want to say it's Gospo Dinovich. Goes by Gospo. Big guy. Artilleryman by trade. And he was at the airport that day. And he talks about being part of the QRF that went to the headquarters. And what they did when they got there. Obviously, you can imagine what a four-story, mostly concrete building, dormitory, administration building type thing. And that it collapsed. And he talks about that. But after all these years, you know, I'm reminded on this day of the stupid decisions that people make, political leaders make, in terms of employing the American military. And we're involved in two of them right now, Afghanistan and Iraq, for different reasons. And so it just, I don't know, it always gives me reason to pause. I was reading about, Smedley Butler. And Smedley Butler, after the war, after he retired from the Marine Corps, some would say for political purposes, but I just find it interesting that he became such an outspoken critic of the government and military intervention around the world at the behest of capitalists. And so I don't know, that crossed my path yesterday when I was doing some reading about Chesty Puller. So, just in my lifetime, right, now mind you, death is forever. We go to Somalia because of the compelling videotape that kept coming across our television sets. The power of the media to influence. So, President Bush, for no strategic reason, sends the United States military into Somalia. And then what happens after the Black Hawk Down thing? We leave. Jeez, ain't worth a squeeze, we leave. So why did we die there? We felt uncomfortable because of what we were watching on TV. So in spite of no strategic interest, we went there with great intentions. And then after a whole bunch of Army Rangers died, then we left. So why did, I can't give you a good reason why they died. Okay. A little bit further back to Lebanon. We go there, right? We get between the Israelis and all the other factions, right? The Christians, the Druze. And they get put in, and I'll tell you what, if you've never done it, get on Google Earth, okay, and I'll do it right now. Beirut International Airport, Beirut International Airport. All right. Click on it. Okay. So it comes up. Now click on satellite. So you'll get the terrain view. Okay. That's where the Marines were. Now zoom out a little bit so you can see the tops of the mountains. So you can get a sense of how close those mountains were. They're called the Shuf Mountains, from where the airport is. And you see that those mountains are right on top of the airport. The people watched and shot at Marines from those mountains on a regular basis. So the proximity is something that'll shock you. But again, what happens? After the barracks is destroyed, I believe we do one more battalion rotation into Beirut, and then we pack it in and we leave. So why were we there in the first place? Exactly. If we weren't prepared to stay, what were we doing there? And why did we go there, and you can't have a magazine in your rifle, and all the rest of the stupid stuff that went on there? Why did my kid die? Can you explain that to me? So then, just for me anyway, you look at Iraq, and You know, you had guys like Tony Zinni saying, you don't need to do this. We don't need to do this. But we somehow got it into our heads that we could go knock over a Middle Eastern government and replace it with other people. And then the simmering feud between the Shiites, the Sunnis, and the Kurds would not be ignited. We believed that. And we went to war there. And it still isn't complete. Still isn't complete. So, what, 15 years later? And then those, the cascade of events that begins with that has now spilled into Syria. The displaced people of that region have now sent their shockwave through Europe, through Western Europe primarily. And now Western Europe deals with that. All laid at the feet of George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Dick Cheney, and Don Rumsfeld. All those geniuses gave us that. A war we did not have to fight. And then if you look at Afghanistan, and you're going to hear maybe today, it might not be today, it might be tomorrow, from Paul Soldra. He is a former Marine. He started the Duffel blog, and he's now the news editor for Task and Purpose. So Paul's a writer. He likes to take on people that are doing stupid things, and he's primarily frustrated with Afghanistan, how that thing's going. And last week was obviously not a good week if you follow events in Afghanistan. So, again, I've talked about it before. People probably listen to it or are sick of hearing me say it, but the decision to expand the ground war, and I think General Zinni describes it as the Colin Powell pottery barn. You break it, you buy it. So we broke Afghanistan. So then the decision gets made that somehow or other broadening the ground war and bringing stability to Afghanistan is something that the United States should invest its money and the lifeblood of its military in. So I don't, you know, I think history is going to judge Colin Powell harshly. I think those decisions that got made under his watch as the Secretary of State, his failing to truly understand the lessons of Vietnam and keep us out of wars that, again, what was the Vietnam thing? Keep us out of protracted wars. Nation building with nebulous goals that the military really doesn't have any business fighting. Now you have, you know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he used a term last week about where we are in this conflict. And I can't remember the exact term that he used, but it was essentially saying that, look, The military piece of this is a small piece of this nation building thing. And it was something like multi-domain or some, I can't remember. So, not going well in Afghanistan. During the fighting season, I think the only way that you could characterize, and yes, the Afghan Air Force is now flying more sorties, I got that. Is that progress? Is that the metric that we'll judge progress by? The Taliban seem to ball up and roll up the Afghan military at will. Now, maybe that's an oversimplification. Maybe that's just paying attention to the headlines. But that seems to be a regular theme. And so today, as we mark the 35th anniversary of events in Beirut, Lebanon, I'm mindful of these military disasters. No, they're not military disasters, because the military does its thing. These foreign policy disasters that the United States embarks on, and that require the lives of young Americans, and then the jackasses that send us there, they ride off to their estate in Fairfax County, or in the Blue Ridge Mountains, or in Texas, or they go to Stanford, or they go back to Montana, or wherever the hell they go, and they write their books. And so, to me, the selfless courage of Marines and sailors and a few soldiers that were there that day is what we remember today. You know, and if you go to the memorial that's been erected at Camp Johnson, inside of Camp Lejeune, you know that what you see on the monument is they came in peace. They came in peace. It was also a watershed event. It was one that most people would tell you is certainly linked to, how do I put it? It's certainly linked to our entrance into a world of terror, a world in which this thing was planned and executed by organizations we didn't really understand at the time. And it took us a long time to kind of get our hands around it, to create the intelligence apparatus. The world was changing, and we didn't notice it. So, all these years later, 35 years later, we remember what went on in Beirut, Lebanon today. But my problem is we keep doing this as a nation. We keep getting involved in things that we can't get out of and we can't make right. And you have people like George Bush, you know, and people will say, oh, Mac, don't blame Bush. He got bad advice. He's the president of the United States, man. The buck, as Harry Truman says, the buck stops here. The buck stops here, right? Well, what about, you know, Condoleezza Rice? What about Don Rumsfeld? Yeah, put all of them in the boat and get rid of them. Get rid of them. And Colin Powell, I mean, he gets credit for Afghanistan, too. Nothing says that we had to stay in Afghanistan, right, and become responsible for it. Yeah. Nothing says that. So stand by for a second. This is live from Camp Lejeune. March on of the Colors. national anthem brought to you courtesy of the, I believe that's the 2nd Marine Division Band. If you've never been to the monument erected with all the names of the Marines and sailors on it at Camp Johnson, it's a beautiful thing. In a grove of trees, green brick, and then the marble slabs of the actual memorial itself. And so today gathered for the 35th time, probably not the 35th time, but today we'll remember that event. And the Commandant's going to speak, so I wanted to take the Commandant's speech live. And I'm trying to see if CG, the 2nd Marine Division, is there. My friend, David J. Furness. And so so stand by while we check out what's going on, and we'll see what people have to say here. But for me, as I said before, it's a reminder of us getting ourselves into things and then people giving the only life they have for some folly. Is it necessary? Is this what we should be doing? Are we committed to it?
On Sunday morning, October 23rd, 1983, 35 years ago today, a violent bombing took place at the headquarters building of the United States Peacekeeping Force in Beirut, Lebanon. This event, plus subsequent actions in Beirut and Grenada, caused the deaths of 273 U.S. Marines, soldiers, and sailors. Most of these men were from Camp Lejeune and were the friends and neighbors of the citizens of Jacksonville and Onslow County.
I don't know who this is, by the way. Retired Marine Corps Commandant Al Gray is here. The Commandant of the Marine Corps is here. And so we'll continue listening.
Almost simultaneously, another bomb detonated in another section of Beirut, killing 58 members of the French peacekeeping force. This ceremony remembers the events of that day and honors those who lost their lives in the cause of peace. While today's observance focuses on those Americans who lost their lives, let us also honor those who were part of the French peacekeeping force, and let us give our grateful appreciation for the Italian forces who helped rescue our troops. Their national flags have been posted at our memorial for today's observance. Let us now honor our French and Italian colleagues with a moment of silence. We are pleased to have the 37th Commandant to deliver the annual Beirut Memorial Observance Address. It is a tradition to reflect on the sacrifices of whose names are behind me. Today, General Robert B. Neller continues that tradition. Our current Commandant comes to this position of leadership after a career that included serving as an infantry officer at all levels. He has strong connections to our community and truly recognizes the importance of this moment in history. The 37th Commandant of the Marine Corps, General Robert B. Neller.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for allowing me to participate. I realized as I get near the end of this journey that I had not been down here on the 23rd of October, so I needed to make it, and so I appreciate the opportunity. So to Major Phillips, General Gray, certainly still love you, Carolina MAGTAP, hoorah. Officials, distinguished guests, Marines, and most importantly, the veterans of Beirut, their families and our loved ones, thanks for being here. It is an honor to be at this memorial to remember. And just let me extend my thanks to the community of Jacksonville and the greater Onslow County and all the other counties as you continue to stand together and work together to overcome challenges, particularly from the recent Hurricane Florence. It's amazing how much work has been done to clean up I know there's a lot left to do, but I really appreciate the community helping those Marines on base and everyone else in the community who's still trying to get their lives back together. You know, there's great places to be a Marine, and every community outside a base says they're the best friend of that base. I don't think there's anybody better than Jacksonville, North Carolina. So thanks. So when I thought about coming here to speak, I thought about the events on 35 years ago. I'm probably one of the few Marines on active duty today that was actually on active duty then. There may be a couple. I don't know. Sergeant Major Green. Are you that old, General Hedlund? You don't look that old. But there's a lot of people here much closer to the events that day than me. For myself, you know, you got to put it in context. It was 1983. We had come out of Vietnam. We'd gone through a period of pretty severe fiscal times. We had a new president. There was money. We're starting to rebuild ourselves, trying to figure out how to do joint operations. The number of Vietnam vets were trying to get us young folks squared away. Just to all the Marines in uniform today, all these Vietnam guys here. So the reason when you go to the airport and they say, thank you for your service, and you haven't really done anything, is because of them. Because when they came home, nobody said that. So when you came home, they said, never again. So Marines, welcome home. So where was I? I was a captain at Quantico at the basic school. We had just formed up a company. And we knew Marines were in Beirut, but, you know, we were naive, not paying attention. We didn't know the dangers and the horrors of war. I was down there. My wife was home in Michigan, pregnant with our second child. And I was focused on the mission. I remember coming in, and you turn on the TV, and somebody said, hey, our barracks got attacked in Beirut. And you're like, what? It's kind of like 9/11. What? They did what? And I think we all kind of grew up that day, because we knew the world had changed. And I remember, for me, looking at the list, there was a guy I knew, a guy named John McCrugel, I'd served with him at San Diego. And then later on that year, I went to pick up Lieutenant General Keith Smith to bring him to a mess night. And I asked him about his family, and he told me his son had been killed in Beirut. His name is on that wall. And I think it changed the way we all looked at the world. I think it changed all of us. And I think it made us realize that it's a dangerous place out there. And the reason our nation has Marines is so that we can go to bed at night and we don't have to worry about stuff like that. So many would state that that event, the loss of those Marines, along with the French paratroopers, started the global war on terror. Maybe that's true. I don't know. But I know it changed the way we saw the world. It changed the way we looked at threats. It changed the way we trained. It changed the way we operated. And those lessons learned carried through the rest of our time as Marines. And that impact of Beirut still shapes us today. Marines always remember the incredible acts of those that preceded us. And this is no less an act of selflessness and sacrifice and courage. Your Marine Corps, this community, continues to pay homage and commemorate those lives lost, to remember the families and the legacy those Marines left. And that legacy matters today, tomorrow, Every member who was present that day, regardless of whether they were Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marines, contributed to that legacy. And we will never forget that, nor will we forget their families or them as fallen heroes. In closing, I'd simply say, in another place, a few years ago, we were ending a long year of fighting in Iraq, and I sat down to be interviewed by a journalist, and she asked me, because we had lost many Marines and soldiers. She said, what would you say to the families of the fallen? And she caught me off guard. And I said, I would tell them that they did their duty. And I knew the minute I said that, that was insufficient. No, they did their duty. But what I should have said, and I said to her later, was, imagine living in a country where people will not come forward to take the challenge of serving. Imagine living someplace where people are not willing to accept the risk to serve their country in times of war and peace. Imagine living in a place where no one's going to stand up and say, I, their name, do solemnly swear I'll support and defend the Constitution of the United States. We don't live there. We live here. And as long as we have men and women from communities like this that are willing to stand up and raise their hand and say, I'll go, we're going to be just fine. We're going to be just fine. And when I think of the names on the wall behind me, that's what those Marines did. They said, I'll go. I'll accept the risk. I will do my duty. So it's really an honor to be here with you today. For the community, thank you for making all of us remember. Thank you for supporting us in everything we do, both here and when we go abroad, when we deploy. It has been my honor to serve this Marine Corps and to serve with all of you. Thank you very much.
Interesting, Commandant. As he does, getting emotional a couple times during his remarks. One is when he welcomed home a Vietnam veteran, and then the second time towards the end. Towards the end, we're speaking to the family.
It's an honor to have the 2nd Marine Division Band continuing their tradition of participation in this observance under the leadership of Gunnery Sergeant Phillips.
I'm curious as to whether General Gray will speak, so we'll listen to the 2nd Marine Division Band. And then hopefully we'll see if General Gray is going to speak. Normally, though, everybody speaks before the keynote speaker. So, 2nd Marine Division Band.
Thank you, Staff Sergeant Phillips and the band. Any short introduction of the 29th Commandant is inadequate to describe the width and depth of the influence, appreciation, and dedicated service of General Al Gray. Yes, sir. Al Gray, Marine.
General Gray, as he was starting to do the introduction, he was sitting on the platform off to the right. He started to do the introduction, and General Gray stood up and just started walking to the podium. And as he kept talking, General Gray said whatever he said. He just said thanks and kind of nudged him out of the way. He's a legend in the Marine Corps. He's specifically a legend, in the 2nd Marine Division in 2MF. They worship the ground he walks on. He was a guy who was a kind of a Marine's Marine commander, who, when he gave awards, he punched people in the chest, you know, and I don't mean he tapped them. I mean, he smoked them, knocked them back a step or two. And I heard about this guy, General Gray, and much beloved. And so very much in that vein, he comes to the podium.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. Of course, it's always a great honor and a privilege to be with our Beirut veterans and their families. I'm not sure, really, if anybody loves me, but I can tell you that all Marines, all real Marines, are never afraid to say that they love fellow Marines and their families. And so I love all of you. Mr. Mayor, all the leadership of Jacksonville, Onslow County, and really this great state of North Carolina, and really this memorial really is part of the whole nation. Thank you for what you've done, and thank you for allowing people like General Kelly, our 28th Commandant, myself, to keep our promise of 35 years ago, which was we would never forget you, we would never forget the sacrifice, we would never forget the heroism of our warriors, Marines, sailors, and the three soldiers that gave up their lives. We would never forget any of that, and more importantly, we would dedicate ourselves to the future. We would dedicate ourselves, as General Neller has pointed out, to being better and to make sure that we would cope with terrorism in the future. And indeed, we did over the years. Because of the heroism and the sacrifice of your sons and your fellow Marines, we improved our capability, our training, our education, has been already pointed out. We got better. We wrote standard operating procedures. We helped all of the services in this great country get ready for combating terrorism and the like. And as I said at the 30th Memorial 5 years ago, led by the Air Force, our Air Force, we found out more about mass casualties, treatment, and all of that than we'd ever known. And because of the work that the Air Force Research did and others, there are probably thousands of Marines and so on, servicemen and women of all services, that are alive today because of the lessons learned. So all of that and much more is part of your legacy. I want to say a few words, too, about a person who helped make this gorgeous memorial possible. 8 years ago, on the 22nd of June, we lost Doris Downs. But Mrs. Downs, who headed the Jacksonville Beautification Committee, and she's the one who drove all of us to create not only this memorial, but the trees that were planted along the highway and the like in honor of our lost son. So we owe her a great deal of credit for that, and I wanted to mention that. I also wanted to mention our 28th Commandant, General P.X. Kelly, whom you all know. He loves you, too, and he can't be with us. He's not really very healthy these days and the like, but he sends you his best. He sends you his love, and I just wanted to pass that on because P.X. and I, we talk quite frequently and the like, and he always brings up how brave you were, how well you faced the tragedy, the adversity to carry on. And so he always remembers you as well. And finally, I would just like to say thank you again to all of you for for who you are and for what you do. I used to worry right after the Beirut bombing and the like. I didn't worry about our Marines because or the sailors that served with us because we're used to that kind of thing, and our fallen comrades wouldn't tolerate us not being ready to go. And if we were, as you recall, right in the middle of the whole tragedy, we went to Grenada and took 8 of the 11 objectives during that little firefight down there on the way back to Beirut. But I was worried about the nation. What was this going to do to the nation? I really wondered about that. And, you know, Jan and I were at a funeral down in Alabama. And out in the countryside, we rode for miles and miles through farmland and the like. And, you know, during that ride, every farmer tilling the soil, hundreds of them, were standing by the roadside or standing out in the fields, standing at attention. And all saluting like this or like this. And I said to Jan, we're going to be all right. We're going to be all right. So thank you all. And as always, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. God bless you and Semper Fidelis.
General Gray getting emotional.
Thank you, General Gray. We treasure your visit with us, and we know that each man and all those who honor Marines remain in your heart. As we reflect in this setting, we can barely see some of the effects of Hurricane Florence. That is a credit to the many who care for this location. We thank them for their attention to this site and the care they give to it daily. This includes persons paid to do so, and many volunteer caretakers. One victim of the storm has been the Onslow County Schools.
They'll wrap that ceremony up. I just wanted to take comments of General Neller and also the see if General Gray was going to speak. So General Gray, interesting guy. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about General Gray a little bit. We'll actually finish opening the show, as is our custom, and then we'll check some news headlines, and then that'll take us up to the top of the hour, and then Mike will join us. Tomorrow, I travel tonight, and so tomorrow you'll hear a new interview. You're going to hear an interview with Paul Soldra, and I'll take care of the news before I get out of town. And so that'll be new. You'll hear an interview that I'll record today with Paul Soldra. He's the guy who founded Duffel Blog, and we'll talk about Afghanistan. And I'll also talk about some great Marine Corps myths. So Paul is a funny guy, a smart guy, and a funny guy. So you'll hear him tomorrow. So and then behind that you'll hear two interviews I've done about Beirut. One is with First Lieutenant at the time, Ron Baskowski, who was there, and also Matt Godsbodinovich, who was Lance Corporal, Gospo. And so you'll hear that on a day or on a couple days that we remember Beirut and the events there. So we'll take a break. More Ball Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it. The All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it, the McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the ReadBoard page at allmarineradio.com.